Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's the WEEI Celtics Podcast with Sam Packard and Jared White. Powered by CLNS Radio.
We got a great show for you here. I am Jared Weiss. I'm joined by Samuel Packard, as you heard him say off the top. You can find me on Twitter at CLNS underscore Jared Weiss. And Sam?
At Sam Packard NBA. We got a great show for you guys today. We're talking to Stool Greeny from Barstool Sports, their Celtics writer. It's a pretty good conversation, but don't Google Stool Greeny. I made that mistake. Nothing but bad results.
All right, let's talk to Dan.
First off, I want to talk about you and your relationship with Isaiah Thomas. You're probably the biggest Isaiah Thomas fan on Celtics Twitter right now, his biggest defender. You took down Gary Tanguay, which I thought was deserved because he was just saying some ludicrous things. But sometimes I think you take your Isaiah fandom a bit too far. And my question is, do you think Isaiah Thomas is a top five point guard in this league?
Well, let me ask a question to your question. Are we talking about right this second, or if I were to build a team and I needed five, you know, to build a top five list that way? Because it's two different arguments, right?
Answers for both. Let's say right now.
Okay, right now, as of what we've seen over the last month, I'd say he's playing at a top five level, at his position. Now, I don't think he's been at a top five level for the entire season, but it's getting to the point where when you look at some of what those other top five guards are doing in the league, Isaiah's production over the last 13 or so games has been right on that level. So while I don't think he can live in that ranking, I think he absolutely deserves to be at least in this discussion.
I was hoping to nail you down and that was a very good nuanced answer, because I would have to agree, and I think it comes down to John Wall. I would say that Steph Curry, Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, and Kyle Lowry are your top four. Right now, I would put Isaiah in that fifth spot, but if I was building a franchise, I feel like John Wall is a better and more consistent player. That's the kind of guy you would turn to over Isaiah.
And then there's also, of course, Damian Lillard, and then, I mean, if we're really opening up here, Marcelo Huertas, of course, who is probably the greatest point guard in the NBA.
He said he had a crazy play where he hid behind the coach and then ran out for a steal. That is
hid behind Eric Spoelstra, who's like one of the smallest coaches in the NBA, too. That's really impressive.
Yeah, I think for me, whenever people have this discussion, they're not really consistent, right? Because when you would think of some negatives of why Isaiah can't be in that group, people would say, oh, well, his height makes him a defensive liability. But yet, I don't see anybody holding Damian Lillard or even Kyle Lowry, whose defensive rating is, maybe a point or two better than Isaiah. It's like they don't need to fit under that same criteria. And I think people just hear that he's 5'9 and think, oh, he's bad at defense. I'd rather have someone like Lillard over him. But Lillard is literally just as bad at defense. So there are things that Isaiah can do on the court that those other players can't do, or that he does just as well. People just can't get past his height, and that really, really bothers me.
My one counterargument that I had planned is that Isaiah Thomas isn't even I wouldn't say the best player on his own team right now. And I think we've seen that in the games that Jay Crowder's been out, that he is clearly the most valuable, and he's the straw that stirs the drink.
Okay, I have a counter to your counter.
Oh, you've come prepared. Okay. I like that.
Yeah, I have a counter to your counter, because think of the rebuild when they first traded out the big three, and it was a hot mess. The one thing that everybody always said they needed in order to make that next step in their rebuild was they needed a guy who could take the ball in the fourth quarter, score it, wasn't afraid of the moment, And that's literally exactly what Isaiah is. So when you think of who's more important between him and Crowder, it's kind of like saying, which kid do you love the most? Because both are really, really important in different ways. You know, Jay's going to take the best wing defender. He allows you to go into these small lineups. But offensively, he's not nearly the producer that Isaiah is. And when something comes, you know, when we're in a five-point-or-less game with under a couple minutes to go, I would rather have the ball in Isaiah's hands than anybody else on the court. So to me, that makes him just as valuable, because when the Celtics need a bucket or when the Celtics need someone to end a run, Isaiah's that guy, whereas Jay plays more of a complementary offensive role.
I mean, they're still in the playoffs without Jay. If Isaiah has been out for this long of a time period, I wonder if they'd even still – they'd be, like, fighting for the eighth spot, I think. I mean, Isaiah has been so – basically, there's one quarter every single game where Isaiah Thomas pretty much single-handedly carries the team and scores, like, 15-plus points. And it's – I can't think of a single game off the top of my head where he basically didn't carry them for either the third or the fourth quarter, where – it was him and the combination with either Evan Turner or Avery Bradley carrying that offense. And as great as Jay is, they are not winning these games without having those huge explosions of scoring. And the way that Thomas is able to kind of answer back for them, it's like every time the opponent scores, Isaiah comes down court and nails a three or hits some sort of absurd floater from the heavens.
I don't want to say that – I don't want to knock what Isaiah does in terms of being his fourth quarter scoring and just the crazy way he's able to get into the paint. I just think Jay Crowder does so much and is so versatile that his value to the whole team – we've seen in these games they haven't really played well while he's been out. So without Isaiah, you miss that fourth quarter scoring. Without Jay, you just – every part of your team, your rebounding, your hustle, especially your defense, your versatility – all of that is lessened when Jay Crowder is out, and that's why I would say he's more valuable. And you said it's like saying which one of your kids you love more. I like Jay Crowder more, and I would not afraid to tell if I had two sons. They're going to know what the rankings are.
I mean, one of your kids is better than the other. Sorry, but it's true.
I know. Stacey is a fucking dick. All right.
It's a tough argument because, yes, Jay allows you to be more flexible with your lineups, with your defensive assignments, but Isaiah's kind of like the little engine that can, you know? Like, he's the one who gets you going, and I don't know if when you look at who else is on the Celtics roster, sure, they still might be okay offensively, but like we saw, you know, what was it, in 2013, where they're scoring 13, 14 points to open a game, and they just don't have the firepower. What good is it if you can't score the ball? And while defense is important and, you know, the defense wins championships and all that stuff is true, I can't say for me personally that, you know, Jay is our best player. I think there's also a difference between your best player and your most valuable player. And that's sort of where I have it. We would not be in this position if we didn't have Isaiah, where you've seen us still kind of live in that 3, 4, 5 seed without Jay, even though it's been terrible without him.
I feel like the entire offense that Isaiah thrives in is predicated on Jay being able to play the four and being able to space the floor. And I think he's the real one versatile guy who can go from kind of the wing to that four position, that swing. Without him, you'd have to play a lot more two-man traditional lineups, and I just don't think Isaiah would have as much success. But basically, we're arguing both of players are very good. One's maybe more talented and the other more valuable. That's a good position to be in for the Celtics right now.
I couldn't agree more, and I think we're really going to get our first sort of look to that three tonight in Portland. It's been great sort of for the argument that he's so valuable because look at how poor they played without him. But now that he comes back, I mean, if they look just as terrible, and granted, you got to work him into the rotation, but we'll know. For me, that'll show me his value more. Is like, sure, everything went terrible when you were out, but now that you're back, what's your impact? If things don't really change, then I don't know. It's one of those kind of just tough situations where his value is still kind of up in the air.
All right, the Crowder storyline's kind of the last hurrah in terms of like the changes in the team until we reach the playoffs. That's in about 2 weeks. Right now, the Celtics are now dead hot. Wow, that's not a phrase.
Dead heat.
A dead heat.
A dead heat situation
with the Hawks, the Heat, and the Hornets. And I tweeted the other day, the Heat, the Hawks, and the Hornets is like an R-rated version of the book from the Hoopers commercials. And no one, I got nothing on Twitter, and I was just furious. Is this one of those times where you release a joke and you think, man, people are going to love this, and I got nothing?
It happens to me every day.
I'll give you a verbal retweet right now.
All right, thank you. All right, but they're in with the Heat, the Hawks, and the Hornets. Where do you see the Celtics finishing in terms of those the four teams, and who do you think they would make best matchup for in the playoffs?
So I'm still holding out on the three seed. I think people have sort of given up that hope. I've said, it's my calling card since October. I think they end up with 47 wins. Where that puts them in that range is anybody's guess. But, you know, we own the tiebreaker against Miami. We own the tiebreaker against Charlotte. If we were to beat the Hawks in our last matchup this season, we'll be tied with them for the season series. And as of now, we have a better conference record, so we jump them. So if the Celtics just get back to how they normally have been playing all season, I don't see how they don't just snag that three seed. I would love to see Miami drop to the six. I don't really want to mess with how well Charlotte's playing. I think they have the similar type of personnel that gives the Celtics. But I just think Miami, we own Miami. People don't want to believe it because they have the star power, but both games have been won by double digits. I just think we're better than them, so I hope that they at least get passed by Charlotte and Atlanta.
So two things. One, I don't understand anyone that thinks the Celtics couldn't get the three seed because they're a game behind Atlanta with two games in hand. So if they win both of those games, they're tied in the standings. And one of those games is going to be against Atlanta, where if they beat them, then they would probably get the upper hand there. So the three seed is very much a likely outcome, or very much a possible outcome. And then as far as Miami, they haven't played them with like Joe Johnson really in the rotation yet. So that's a huge, huge variable. And Miami has, I'd say, been generally better with him. I mean, they're 6-4 in their last 10 games. They're really marginally better than Boston.
And to that point, though, but look at the teams they're beating. They played Philadelphia twice and beat them. They played Phoenix and beat them. So I think the Celtics are going through this tough stretch of, getting blown out by the Clippers, getting blown out by Oklahoma City. Miami's playing nobody. So when you look at the same teams they're beating, the Celtics have beat them also. So even though they've been 6-4 in the last 10, it's not like they were beating Oklahoma City or they were beating the Clippers. And that should give me reason for concern. I'm not going to get all hot and bothered because they're, taking a back-to-back from the Sixers or anything.
That's the thing about the Heat, though, is the rest of their schedule is pretty easy. So that's why I think they have a real chance of jumping up at least to the third or fourth seed. I think the Celtics could lose home court advantage and end up being the five. It's really anyone's game right now, but the Celtics do have a kind of tough remaining schedule, still having to play the Trailblazers tonight, still having to play the Warriors, and then finishing the season with those three teams. None of those are guaranteed wins, and especially the Hornets and Heat have a lot more built-in wins to their schedule, but it's really they could end up anywhere.
Yeah, and it's all about consistency. Like, it's just as likely that the Celtics could win all those games as it's supposed to be this foregone conclusion that they're going to lose to the Hornets, they're going to lose to the Heat. But even if they were to fall down to the fifth seed, and let's say, Miami's at the four, I'm not convinced that in a series the Celtics don't win that. I'm not afraid of going to Miami and winning a game and then just taking care of business on your home court.
I mean, frankly, they probably wouldn't even get to the point that home court advantage would be such a huge deal. I mean, Miami, all three of those teams are teams that could go six or seven games with the Celtics, but the Celtics at full strength are certainly capable of winning those series.
That's the thing.
Or expected to win those series.
No matter where they end up, I think the Celtics can beat any of those teams in a first-round series. Too much faith in Stevens being a basketball guru and figuring it out over the course of at least four games. I think the Celtics are actually the third best team in the Eastern Conference, so it doesn't really matter where their seed land. That's where they're going to end up, at least in the semifinals.
Right, and I'm with you. I mean, again, I'm more about the win total than the seeding. So I've been pegged. I've hitched my wagon to 47. But that very well may end up in the five seed just because everybody else goes on a tear. We'll have to see. But I kind of, it doesn't really matter. The way they played over, you know, the last 80 or so games or 70 or so games, whatever it is, they've shown me enough that our expectations should at least be get out of that first round, whether you have home court or not. They're better than these other teams. And while they don't have the playoff experience like someone like Miami might have, they've at least went last year, and they know what it's like to get swept. And I think all that matters. So I really can't – it may go six, it may go seven, but, hey, even the championship team in 08 went seven early. So I don't see the big deal in that either.
And, I mean, sure, most of these guys haven't had significant playoff runs, but it seems that usually – once a young team gets just one taste of the playoffs, they pretty much get it, and the next year they make a much deeper run. I mean, we saw the Warriors did that 3 years ago. The Thunder did that a little bit longer before that. Obviously, the Celtics are not in the same mold as those teams, but they were teams that were generally the same age group and kind of came up at the same time. With the Celtics, what do you think is like the wrinkle that comes out once it's playoff time?
For me, it's and it probably helps your Jay Crowder argument, but it comes down to their ability to defend. I think when the Celtics get in trouble is when they're slow on their rotations. They have a lot of cheap, tacky touch fouls. I think if they can just get back to how they defended earlier in the year when, you know, their defensive rating as a team was, you know, under 100, just really making it tough on teams, I think that's going to at least get them out of the first round. So when you start to move quicker or move later into the second round, the Eastern Conference Finals, then it comes down to talent, in my opinion, and how that talent stacks up. But if they can just not take long twos, play good, sound, solid defense, I think the teams that are ahead of them, who they would be facing, don't have enough to match that.
All right, this kind of plays into my argument because Isaiah Thomas is not your would be in your top five if you're playing your all-defensive lineup. But you're going to want to have him on the court while you're closing with him. So my question to you, I guess, is what's your who are the five Celtics you want finishing the game in the playoffs?
I'd say Isaiah's the one, Avery at two, or two or three, Smart, maybe at the two or three, however you want to change that, Crowder at the four, and probably Amir at the five.
Amir Johnson finishing games. Mister doesn't play in the second half. I mean,
yeah,
that's really
right? I think defensively, I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think, I mean, him and Sullinger, it's a toss-up. I go with Amir just for his ability to run the floor. I think if you get a stop, he has the ability to get out and run a little bit more. But it's also based on the matchups that the other team is throwing off. But, you know, I don't see Golden State taking out Curry at the end of games. I don't see Portland taking out, you know, Lillard. I don't see any of these other top five guards who are bad at defense getting taken out. So you can hide Isaiah. He doesn't have to be the one that's guarding Steph Curry if that's who it is when we make the finals. I mean, it doesn't – there are ways to hide him in that lineup because the problem with the Celtics is they hold the ball at the end of games for 20 seconds on the shot clock and then they take a long contested jumper. I think Isaiah being on there offensively just allows things to move so much more smoothly.
All right, I'm with you on this one because in my final five, I'm leaving Isaiah on the court, but I'm going a bit crazy. Jay Crowder at the five, Evan Turner at the four, Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley, Isaiah Thomas. Go super small, but I would say those are probably your five best players on the team. And just see what happens. It's probably not the five you're going to finish the game with most of the times, but it's something I'm excited to see if Stevens will break it out just because it's a crazy lineup that's super small, but is super. I think could be super dangerous.
Yeah, and the key to that for me would be what Evan Turner are we getting? Are we getting peak
the
Evan
best
Turner,
Evan Turner?
Or are we getting Valley Evan Turner? I think that would dictate the whole thing.
Evan Turner is great for getting Isaiah off the ball. So when you have that second ball handler in there, Bradley can't really do it and Smart can't really do it. So that's why I like the combination of Turner and Isaiah. And
yeah, I mean, he's 6'7". I mean, he's got some size to him, which is nice. He makes me nervous because, I mean, full disclosure, I was probably the leader in the charge of killing Evan Turner to start the year. I mean, he was just so frustrating to watch of holding the ball too long, trying to do a crazy behind-the-back pass that was a turnover. He hadn't learned yet where his hot spots were and how to get there effectively. He since turned it around. So if you're going to give me the Evan Turner we've seen over the last, you know, month or two, I'm right there with you. He would be a good guy to end that game.
Full disclosure from me, I also, every home game, just go up and talk to Evan Turner, and he's generally a nice guy. So I'm rooting for him, basically. He's Andy, I agree with you. He's playing well, especially finding his spots on the baseline, just that mid-range jumper. No one has a shoots a better mid-range game than Evan Turner, and I think there's a big reason why the Celtics are probably going to re-sign him in the offseason.
Well, it depends. I think he's sort of, and Sellinger might be doing this also, but they may be playing their way out of Boston because, you know, I think it makes sense to bring Turner back, but at a price. You know, I don't think he's a $11, $12 million a year player, but someone like Phil Jackson in New York could just say, you know what, here's $10, $11 million a year. And at that point, for me, you have to walk away just because, you know, that's a lot of money, even though the cap's going up. I don't know if I would be comfortable with that.
Yeah, I mean, the question for Evan, and we've kind of covered this in the past, is he's probably going to get offers of even 12 from some teams, but he's probably only going to be getting something around 9 or 10 from the Celtics.
He's got to take a hometown discount.
So is he going to take a hometown discount? He's someone that is very likely to do that because he's talked a lot in the past about how good of a place Boston's been for him and compared to how he got let go in Philly, which, I mean, he generally has good things to say about Philly, but then seeing how bad things went in Indiana, I mean, he values Boston so much, and he's been pretty vocal about it. I think he even talked about it on the show a couple weeks ago, too, but shameless plug there. But he's someone that I think he really understands the value of the hometown discount because he's kind of gone through the arduous journey of when you leave the hometown. So he's definitely likely to consider it. But if he's going to get like a $13 or $14 million offer for 4 years, I mean, it's kind of hard to pass up that money.
Yeah, and I think also what plays into it is he seems like a smart guy. I think he can see the path that the Celtics are on. So, you know, maybe it's just a matter of do I take a couple – $1 million less to go play with Boogie Cousins and Kevin Durant, or, you know,
but that he would have to re-sign in Boston to do that, wouldn't he?
I mean, I don't know what the numbers are. I'm just thinking.
Oh, I mean that to play with Boogie and Kevin Durant, he'd have to stay in Boston because the Celtics are obviously going to trade for both of them next year.
Yeah, so I mean, the point is basically that like he can see the path that we're on, and that may impact his decision of. Okay, yeah, it's more money in New York, but they're a hot dumpster fire compared to, you know, the trajectory that the Celtics were on.
You know who's definitely walking out that door is Sully, because he's going to get offered like a $16 million a year contract, and the Celtics are just going to say, hey, man, Sully, if you don't sign that contract, you're an idiot, because we're not getting anywhere close to that. And I'm perfectly fine with that. Sully, go make your $16 million a year.
Yeah, see, that would make me sad. I'm a big Sully guy.
I like Sully, too. But he's not a $16 million a year player.
No, most definitely not. But that would hurt to see just because.
Oh, he's their best rebounder.
Yeah, when you think of where they got him at 21, I think it was, and all the injury risks, I mean, he seemed to get that under control this year. And when he just decides to just get down on the block, he's a monster. And we saw he had something like 5 offensive rebounds the other night. I just think he would. Unless they were going to replace him with an ample rebounding big man, that would hurt them, believe it or not.
Okay, Jimmy Butler didn't get traded to the Celtics this during the trade deadline, but according to Chris Mannix at the Vertical/Comcast/ Every Tom Ford Store in New York, they almost got into negotiations, but the offer was such a low ball that it didn't even really get that far. Danny Ainge mentioned that they had, at the deadline, negotiations about a player that wasn't rumored, even though Jimmy Butler was rumored and speculated by a lot of us, and that these negotiations in general can lay the groundwork for more significant negotiations during the offseason. So he pretty much confirmed that Jimmy Butler's getting traded to the Celtics in the offseason, which we all know, case closed. But a lot of hypotheticals have been coming up about what would you trade for Jimmy Butler? And the prevailing one out there has been either Avery Bradley or Marcus Smart and the Brooklyn pick, and probably even more involved, especially for salary matching, to get Butler. Now, I think you have to play that game with, is the Brooklyn pick a top 2 pick or is it the 4th or 5th pick? Because it's going to be probably one of those two things. So operating on the idea that it's the 4th or 5th pick, which is most likely, would a trade like that interest you, GM Greenberg?
I'd go crazy. I'm of the camp, and this may be a minority, but even if it's 1 or 2, I'm not completely against it.
Woo!
Because
oh no, I'm with you on that one.
Because here's why, right? I'm the kind of guy, sure, Ben Simmons, Brandon Ingram, they could turn into the next LeBron and Kevin Durant. But that's a maybe, right? You're going to give me a young Jimmy Butler, who I now have control of for, I think, 4 more years, who's an absolute stud. He is, when I think of blue chip players that the Celtics need to bring in to take that next level, I see that happening quicker with someone like a Jimmy Butler, and as opposed to waiting for Ingram or Simmons or whoever to develop. Now, you would take some setbacks based on the players you have to give up. And I kind of threw this out on Twitter. Like, what would you do if the Bulls said, okay, we'll trade you Jimmy Butler, but you also had to take Derrick Rose?
Oh, he's got 1 more year left on his deal, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why you wouldn't do that. I mean, I'm still not sure how you're going to match the salaries on that. Although they might, I think with enough space for announcing, they could do that. But it's just for 1 year. You get that kind of tryout year to see if Rose is worth committing to at $20 million for the future. And unless they are clearly going to get like Durant or somebody else in the free agency market, I don't see why you don't do it.
I feel
yeah.
I...
The only thing I can think of is, does that, and again, not knowing the money or anything like that, but does, if we were to take on Derrick Rose, who makes about $20 million, let's say, per year, Jimmy Butler makes probably, what, almost $20 million a year, would you do that if that then meant that you can't get someone like Al Horford? So that way you have your stud in Butler, but you miss out on someone that, like Horford, who could be an attractive teammate for someone like Durant in 2017, whatever it may be. So that's why I kind of have to sit there and pause about it, because A, is Rose coming off the bench? Like, I'm not about to bring Isaiah off the bench now, so where does he sort of fit in? There's a lot to think about, so I hope that's not the conversation, because if there is no Derrick Rose, I'm absolutely trading whatever I can, player pick, to get Butler.
I wouldn't trade for Derrick Rose. I just think it adds... Isaiah's already dealt with situations with too many point guards in the past. I just don't think it would be helpful at all for team chemistry. But I'd give up really pretty much anything. I'd give up probably the top pick and their choice of Marcus Smart or Avery Bradley for Jimmy Butler. I agree with you. Him and Jay Crowder went together at Marquette. There's definitely some chemistry there. Jimmy Butler is also best friends with Mark Wahlberg. There's already a built-in connection there. And
so they could get Mark to play for the team as well.
Absolutely. Put him at the four. But if your three best players are Isaiah Thomas, Jimmy Butler, and Jay Crowder, I think you're, I don't want to say a contender, but I think you're definitely a contender in the East. And you just have to add one more piece, and you would have enough money at that point, I think, to bring in a person like Al Horford. Then you're an NBA title contender. So I'd give up the farm for Jimmy Butler.
I'm just nervous. Like, I don't think they'd be able to keep Crowder if they were to get Butler, because I don't think Avery or Smart and picks is enough talent-wise. Like, sure, you could, you know, throw in some, you know, Tyler Zeller or Amir Johnson's contract to make the money work or whatever, but from a talent perspective, if you think of what you're losing, you know, Jay Crowder is kind of like a poor man's Jimmy Butler. So I can't imagine that they wouldn't at least want him back, especially because he's on a really good value deal. You know, he's only making, I think, $7 million a year. So I can't imagine that if they were to part with a cornerstone player like Butler, that wouldn't have to be, like, especially if the pick ends up being like 4 or 5 as opposed to 1 and 2. I guarantee you that they'd probably have to throw in Crowder.
I'm just imagining a situation where they can do a complete rebuild, and maybe I'm just wishful thinking. So you throw them maybe a Brooklyn 2018, the 3, and what might be like the 10 or the 11 into the Dallas pick, and give them Marcus Smart and just say, hey, man, Bulls, you guys are going young right now. Build around Smart and Portis and Dougie McBuckets and just tank next year and try to get the next star. That would be my sales pitch to John Paxson. All right, we wouldn't be a basketball podcast and not be able to talk about D'Angelo Russell, Nick Young, Iggy Azalea, and just one of the best stories, or at least the most hilarious stories in my book. And I think it's awesome just that the NBA has turned into a full soap opera. We had the Derek Fisher thing. We have this. And it consumes my entire life, and I'm not complaining whatsoever. It's just constant entertainment. But Stool Greeny, what is your take on the D'Angelo Russell saga?
Hot take. All right, my hot take is I wouldn't be surprised if he's out of the league in 4 years.
Damn right. Okay, give me a Luke.
I think the studio's on fire after that one. Jeez.
So, and here's why. Just because I think this is something that, you know, it's going to follow him. Even if the Lakers were to get rid of him, people don't forget. You know, there are people who like Nick Young. There are people who just have brains and realize locker room etiquette, and you just can't do that because for a team to be successful, everyone has to trust each other. They have to be there for one another. Here's a kid who clearly just doesn't get it. You know, whether or not he meant it to get out, like, what are you even recording it for in the first place is sort of my opinion on it. Like, did you just plan to just have it on your phone so you could watch by yourself? Again, that all doesn't make sense to me, but I think his value is tanking. I mean, you could probably get him for 50 cents on the dollar. There's no way the Lakers can keep him, and that's unfortunate because, you know, he was supposed to be their, you know, next sort of guy in L.A., but what an idiot. Like, what an absolute idiot.
Here's my defense of D'Angelo Russell. He's 19 years old, and he's stupid, just like every other 19-year-old ever. I've never met a smart person at the age of 19, so I think eventually, if as long as he doesn't mess up whatsoever moving forward, people will realize, oh, yeah, you really fucked up because you were 19, but, I mean,
right.
Everyone's 19. Everyone makes stupid mistakes. I don't think, as long as he's able to play basketball well, I think people are going to quickly forget that. I don't think that Lakers can really afford to do anything with him because he's their best player or most talented player on their roster right now.
Yeah, and I just think there's a difference, and yeah, I agree with you. He's 19. Like, when I was 19 at Arizona State, I did unspeakably stupid things. That's fine.
But that's because you were at Arizona State.
That is. I'm a proud Sun Devil. But if this was something like, oh, he got in a fight outside of a nightclub, like, fine, that's no big deal. But it means more to me that, you know, he didn't have the foresight or the brain power to think, I'm breaking a teammate's trust, which is something that I think doesn't matter how old you are. That's just a common human thing to know, like, okay, if my buddy's cheating on his girlfriend, like, I'm not going to blow up his spot to his girlfriend just because that's just something. I think we all knew that at 19. And I think it's even worse when, you know, it's your teammate, someone you have to build around and trust. And maybe it's because I'm 29, but I can't comprehend what his brain is thinking.
So, I mean, here's how I see the situation. I mean, for one, I talked about this on Twitter and caught a lot of flack for it. I don't think the basketball world should be focusing in on Nick Young's situation and his relationship with Iggy Azalea. There's so many variables there in which we don't know anything about, whether it's an open relationship, all that kind of stuff. People just generally apply whatever their standard is or just what the general consensus standard of relationships is and monogamy is, and they apply to the situation when you really don't know what the hell.
No, here's why the basketball world shouldn't be talking about the situation. Nick Young sucks and Iggy Azalea sucks, so there's really it doesn't really matter in the long run. Just like the story is D'Angelo Russell.
That's a more important part. Although we will always have the booty music video, so we have to thank the world for that. But
yeah, and I thought it's kind of messed up. Like, if you watch those press conferences by each of them the other day, you know, it's not any of our business how they resolve this issue. Like, I would rather focus on, you know, how this is going to impact them on the court, whether
exactly.
They're just pleasing this kid out. I mean, I don't care how many conversations they have to have or if their friendship is ruined. Like, that means nothing to me. It means more to me, okay, are the Lakers going to move him, or, you know, how is this impacting their, you know, if he was still the high-fiving everybody in their win last night. So I think they're all sort of putting on a brave face where internally they just must want to kill this kid.
Absolutely. And so what I found interesting is there was a theory I saw on Reddit that I thought was pretty good stab as to how this video got out. Nick Young's Instagram was hacked pretty recently, and the prevailing theory is that the video was Snapchatted by D'Angelo to Nick Young, because on Snapchat you can upload your videos from your camera roll on iPhone and send it. So that's why, even though it's like a 44-second video, why it doesn't match the video limitations for Instagram or Snapchat. So he sent that on the DL to Nick Young on Snapchat. The hacker got Nick Young's password from his Instagram account, which was probably pretty much the same password for his Snapchat, was able to get into his Snapchat and pull the video. and then probably sold it to TMZ or whoever. I can't even, I'm not sure exactly how it got out in the first place. But that makes a lot of sense because I think it's been pretty apparent that D'Angelo Russell looks, I mean, you look at him up there talking about how this get out. He looks like completely clueless. So I actually definitely believe what he's saying. And when you put that, when you try to apply that context to it, it seems like, you know, it's pretty clear that they just had a, they had a game going, which really isn't unheard of. And especially because most people covering the subject aren't part of the Snapchat generation, which I am regrettably somewhat part of. But people send all sorts of crazy shit to each other over Snapchat. Thankfully, I've only gotten like 2 dick pics from random people on Snapchat. Please send more.
Oh, I pressed you on those?
Yeah, thanks, buddy. Good co-host. And the... You know, these guys, they make crazy Snapchat videos, send it to each other. It's Snapchat. It's supposed to. You're supposed to see it once and then it's gone. That's how it's generally supposed to go. So it's not that big of a deal. You don't expect something like this to happen. So it's really not as crazy and hard to understand as I think most people covering it that don't even know what a ChapSnat is or whatever.
Right.
It makes a lot more sense when you're able to actually empathize with the thought process of somebody in their early 20s.
Yeah, and I think I'm trying to remember where I heard it from. It may have been on the rundown on Barstool, but pretty much what needs to happen is Kobe just needs to stand up and be like, this stuff happens. You know, he snitched on Shaq, it happens. And I think if Kobe was sort of like his presidential pardon to D'Angelo Russell, like, don't worry about it, I'll change the narrative for you, like, this isn't that big a deal. I'm surprised that hasn't happened because, like, what does Kobe care? He's Kobe.
Kobe should, like, put out a dick pic right now just to completely divert the situation.
Yeah.
He's got nothing left to lose, right?
Right. And I think, I mean, I was hoping that he was going to drop, like, 30 last night to try to change the narrative that way, but he played, like, 6.5 minutes and then was in a full body cast. But I don't think it would hurt him to just be like, hey, this stuff happens. You all remember what happened with me and Shaq. This kid's young.
He's not going to remind people. Yo, you guys remember that time I snitched on Shaq?
Could you imagine if they had Snapchat and iPhones like 10 years ago and all that shit went down? It would have been incredible.
Yeah.
All right. Dan, you mentioned Barstool, and everyone outside of the Barstool universe is always curious about the inner workings of Barstool.
Yep.
But you are the Celtics writer there, and I want to know, have you met Dave Portnoy?
Or anybody else from Barstool?
Yeah, let me tell you this. I have not met a single person at Barstool.
That's what I was guessing.
Yeah, so I just actually, well, you can actually subscribe to this also on iTunes, but I just did B-Squad with Blind Mike this past weekend. It was my first time meeting him, first time meeting Rear Admiral. So it's crazy. I mean, if there are different levels to the stool, I'm like not even remotely on the surface in terms of sort of what goes on there. I mean, I'm not filled in on any future plans. I pretty much only stick to my sort of platform in the Celtics and that's sort of it. Dave and I will email back and forth every once in a while about stuff. But other than that, I met them once in Panza in the North End before a Celtic game. They were having like a company sort of holiday outing before I even started blogging for them. That's my favorite restaurant in the North End. If you haven't been there, you need to go. Best bread in the city. But no, I've never even met any of them before.
Yeah, because I started my career working for CLNS Radio, and I didn't meet anybody from the website for years until I think there was like a get-together in Boston. But the people that created the company were from Maine and Pennsylvania. And
right.
It's amazing how nowadays it's like you don't even – there's no home office. I don't know if Barstool has like a actual office where people can go and write, but I assume not because I assume you're doing most of your work from home or wherever you're working from.
Yeah, so for me, I don't. I mean, I've never been to the Boston office. You know, I'm not going to the – they're all moving to New York. I'm not doing that, or at least haven't been approached yet. And how it started was really kind of crazy because they say it all the time of like, hey, if you want to write here, just start a site, keep it updated, send it in, and we'll read it, and if it's good, we'll get back to you. And that's pretty much exactly what I did. It was a time for the Celtics last year where they were making their playoff push. They had just traded for Isaiah, and there really wasn't any coverage on Barstool. And as someone who read the site every single day, like, that infuriated me. So, you know, Hank was doing it every once in a while. But
oh, Hank was terrible at it.
No, he was great, but he was, you know, he had a lot more pressing, you know, a lot more fun things to do than sort of grind with the Celts game in, game out. So I made my own website, called it The Parquet Perspective, wrote like 3 posts a day of all different types of stuff, like game pre-game, post-game, fun stuff. And I remember it was a game right around the end of February, early March, that Isaiah had had this crazy performance, and Dave had tweeted out, like, man, this Isaiah kid, like, he's the real deal. And I just replied to him and said, yeah, you know, I agree. I wrote about it on my site. And he apparently saw that link, clicked on it, and read it. He followed me for about 30 seconds just to DM me to tell me to keep writing and to keep sending him some stuff. So I did. And then he kind of just said, you know what, we'll make you a login. We'll test it out for the rest of last season. And since then, no one's really sort of changed my login or told me not to keep doing it. And it's sort of developed into my thing, and it's a blast doing it. I love talking to all the stoolies about it, and I'm proud that that Barstool now has a consistent Celtic voice, because I think it's something that they needed before I started.
Now, I find your writing fascinating, because you're writing, I mean, I think pretty clearly from a fan's perspective, who also pretty clearly knows what the hell they're talking about, and you don't seem to have any sort of editorial boundaries. You pretty much can talk about whatever you want, however you want, and you can use whatever fucking adjective you want.
Right.
I mean, what do you have any editorial parameters from above, and like how do you structure your approach to covering the team?
Yeah, so before I started writing, I mean, I was huge fans of Jerry Thornton's Patriots blogs, Rear Admiral Bruins blogs, but also writers like, you know, Zach Lowe and people like that were on Grantland at the time. And Barstool is so competitive where, like, the biggest thing is you don't want to sound like everybody else. Like, how I write, I try not to sound like Dave or Feidelberg or anything like that. But what's so empowering on it is we have complete freedom. You know, like, I don't have an editor that writes my headline for me, or I don't have someone that says, hey, this post can only be 400 words. So what Dave does is, because, you know, I think part of it is because he's so busy and working on bigger and better things, that he just trusts us that we're going to put out good content. But if I write a terrible blog, there's no guarantee that it even gets posted. So I think that's sort of like our, okay, when I'm getting ready to do this, I need to make sure that it's up to snuff, or I'm going to be spending 2 hours writing this and it's not even going to get posted. And that's the worst feeling in the world.
Yeah, because I saw in one of your most recent articles, you basically wrote about how your dad emotionally punched you in the dick by not getting you to fly out to Phoenix.
Yeah, he did.
So, I mean, one, I hope your balls are okay. But two, you know, that was kind of like the lead of your story, and that you don't see a lot of leads like that covering the Celtics. But did you find that people really gravitated towards kind of the personal aspect of it, and how you're able to write from, I guess, probably more closer to their perspective rather than writing at them?
I think that's what makes Barstool successful with everything we write, is if, you know, I'm allowed to speak in the blog the same way I do texting with my friends or texting with my dad or whatever during a Celtic game, when I'm just completely irrational. And I think for me, what I try to do is I don't want to lose that. I want to keep being that irrational Celtic green teamer that I've been my entire life. But at the same time, I like to provide some real substance to back that up. So, for example, I may be a little out of control with my Isaiah Thomas crusade, but at the same time, like, I'm going to present to you the numbers of why it makes sense. So I think that's the balance of where I've tried to be, like, part Barstool, part Zach Lowe, part Jay King, and all the traditional Boston media guys that do a fantastic job that I'm in awe of, because they have real deadlines, and they have...
Yeah, we don't talk about Jay King here on this podcast, just an FYI. We got some beef with him.
Oh, see, I love Jay King. He's great to me. I mean, me and him, we're great. And I once, I was in Denver when the Celtics played the Nuggets, and I sat close to where they were. And, I mean, they're just in their computers grinding the whole time. And, you know, that's where I kind of like what I get to do, because I can sit there and, you know, write down some notes and enjoy the game. But I don't need to then freak out and bust out a blog so it can get posted 30 minutes after the game ends. I can sort of take my time and think about how I want it to look and structure and all that. So credit to them, and please resolve your beef with them. They do fantastic.
No, don't worry. It's a fake beef.
It's a fake beef. We actually are very good friends with Jay King. He just also hosts a Celtics podcast.
He does. I haven't been on that one yet, though, so maybe I need to fake beef with him.
Yeah.
You'll be in Robert Parrish's class. Not to promote one of our rival podcasts, but their interview with Robert Parrish was really good. And also Celtics Beat's interview with Kevin Pelton I just listened to today.
There's so really many good podcasts out there.
Yeah, like I like every other Celtics podcast. I mean, and you all, everyone listening to this has plenty of time to listen to all our shows. Ours is pretty much every Thursday night, so you can listen to that Friday morning before the Celtics game and listen to all the other ones whenever you want.
Nice.
All right, we got some questions from the Twitter world.
So tweet hashtag WEEI Celtics if you want to ask questions on next week's show. We got way too many questions here. I want to start with, can we start with Seafoam Jones?
Because
his questions
Jones
are always pretty amazing. So first off, best starting five made entirely of one cloned player, and you can't say LeBron because I think that's too easy.
Current player cloned
five times going up against this year's Warriors, basically.
Kevin Durant.
That's like the second most easy.
Yeah, that's fair.
Give me something. Well, really stretch me here.
All right. Karl Anthony Towns.
I love that.
Oh, that's a good one.
Perfect. Okay. Why?
Did you see him D up that point guard? What was it, like two nights ago?
Yep.
I can't remember who the guard was, but they couldn't. Like, he's not a center. He's not a big man. He doesn't have a position. He is just an absolute freak.
There's too many of these guys in the NBA now that were like guards that turned out to be physical specimens at 7 feet tall. With Davis,
Kelly Olynyk?
Is that
who you were? Okay.
The Greek freak? Five Greek freaks would be the freakiest, and that's it would be weird and kind of foreign, and that would be my pick. All right, next question. If you had to draft a Celtics team with one player from each decade, so the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and then 2000 still present, what would that team be?
All right, so let me think back here. 60s, I mean, obviously Russell.
Yeah.
70s would probably be Havlicek for me.
I think that's obvious, too. I can't think of maybe Dave Cowens, but I think Havlicek makes the most sense.
Now, we're not factoring in positions, right?
No, you can do whatever you want.
All right, 80s obviously is Bird. I mean, come on, what are we doing?
90s is Pierce.
Is that Vitaly Potapenko?
Dino Raja maybe get my pick, but I don't know. Kenny Anderson, Rodney Rogers.
I mean, Reggie Lewis could do it.
Yeah, I mean, 90s, you got to go Pierce. 2000s.
KG, you could go Isaiah. Is your Isaiah fandom that much? That team does need a point guard, but
Isaiah is 2010s. Don't forget, we're in a different decade now.
Oh, yeah. You can use the six man, too.
If it counts by people that they traded, yeah, I mean, obviously KG. For the 2000s, for the 10s. So where we are now.
Don't forget, you still have Prime Rondo.
I would rather have Isaiah than Rondo. That's me. Even though, I'm maybe one of the last few people here that are on the planet that are still Rondo apologists. I mean, the same argument that we were having right now about Isaiah, I had about Rondo for his duration of his time here, but if we had to pick between the two, I'd rather have Isaiah.
I have really no arguments with your team. It seems pretty logical.
Yeah.
But a good question. All right.
Did we get 50s Bill Charmant or Bob Cousy, I mean, on that team?
No, Bill Russell was obviously the 50s.
Yeah, because 50s, yeah, Bob Cousy was the MVP. Cousy, back, I mean, in
that's not even real.
He lives up the street from me in Worcester, so I gotta go with Cousy as the Worcester boy for the 50s.
All right. Anybody from the 40s, Celtic? Okay,
I have no idea.
Okay, let's go to someone that we know you've never met in person. Eric Barstool asks, if the C's end up in the 4-5 matchup, would you rather play the Hawks, Heat, or Hornets?
Heat.
Yeah, I think we've covered that one earlier. We've dominated the Heat this year, and Dwayne Wade's a terrible person. This podcast, actually, its first iteration was first called the I Hate Dwayne Wade podcast.
Wait, really? Before Loving Anthony Davis?
Before it was the We Love Anthony Davis, but then we tried to have Paul Flannery on, and he was just like, I can't go on a podcast called the I Hate Dwayne Wade podcast. So then
now,
we changed it.
The only thing that scares me about facing Miami early and then Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals is historically, the Celtics have not been able to buy a foul in either of those arenas. So that gives me some concern. But I think Atlanta has two good shooters. The Hornets are playing too well, so you kind of have to pick the Heat.
All right, Stand for Something, RLS003 asks, out of all the free agent/trade rumors that have come out recently, which one do you feel is most likely to occur for the Celtics? And keep in mind something that literally has just happened while we're recording this. DeMarcus Cousins has been suspended one game without pay by the NBA for his 16th technical foul.
Okay, so which one do I feel most likely is probably the theory where no free agents come to the Celtics. But if I had to pick a player, I'd say Horford, just because I think there was a little under the table sort of, you know, negotiating at the All-Star break. I think he's
a little bit of probably, leg rubbing there.
Yeah, a little elbow rubbing, the most likely. I've already made it clear to Boogie Cousins that he can have my North End apartment if he wants it. All he has to do is just come to Boston. So I would love for that. I don't understand the hate against him. I think it's stupid to sort of judge him based on the situation that he's in. I mean, you don't hear a peep about him when he's on Team USA and they're winning. You know, you don't hear a peep about Draymond Green complaining because they win. So I'm all about the Boogie train, but if I had to pick, it would be, you know, that nobody shows up, because that's how my life has been. So,
all right, this one's from Sake Steve, or at Steve for three. If you had to be the owner of an expansion team in the NBA, what city would you choose?
Oh, Las Vegas. That's easy.
What would your what would the mascot be? Here, I've got an idea. It's the Las Vegas Knights, but it's like sword fighting knights. Knights with a K, but then it just has a good ring to it. The Las Vegas Knights.
That's a good one. I think, I mean, if you guys ever been to Vegas before?
No, I have not.
I have not. So you have to educate us.
Okay, so when you walk up and down the strip, you have all these guys on the side of the street just like flipping these little like call girl cards or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that would be my mascot. I don't know how they would be able to work that in, but you can't be in Las Vegas without seeing all these dudes that are just, who knows where they come from, but they're literally everywhere. I don't know what that would be in terms of a family-friendly environment, but either that or maybe some dice or something. I don't know, Las Vegas dice or something.
I like that.
So I would call it the Las Vegas Strip, singular, not plural. Oh. This one of those singular ones. And the mascot is an Elvis impersonator and a really trashy stripper.
That works.
But you know what?
Super trashy, though.
Now that I've thought about this, if not Las Vegas, I would go back to Seattle. Yeah. They need a basketball team. It was messed up how they lost their team. I might even choose Seattle over Las Vegas. They deserve, you know, there's such good basketball history up there. They deserve something.
My one wild card for this experiment would be Montreal. Ooh. I think the little French-Canadian aspect would be kind of weird in the NBA, and I kind of like how that would work out. We've seen Canada loves basketball with the Raptors, apparently not so much with the Vancouver Grizzlies, but the Expos were always like a weird team with powder blue, and just Montreal is kind of a weird place, and the whole French influence on the team I think would just be generally entertaining.
Not a bad one.
Okay, which this is also from Sake Steve. Final minute, game 7, round 1. What is your ideal 5-man lineup for the potential matchups against Atlanta, Charlotte, Miami? We talked about the lineup of death that they have, although it's really more of a lineup of coma. But are you sticking with that lineup that you said before, where it's, was it Smart, Thomas, Bradley, Crowder, and Amir Johnson?
Yeah, I don't see what not. I mean, Atlanta's tough because Paul Millsap is such an interesting player where, like, he's kind of like their... He can play the five, even though he's kind of 6'9", and he can stretch the floor. Horford, it's tough because they kind of play big, right? I don't know how often Atlanta goes into that small lineup, but yeah, I would stick with it. And if you have to interchange Turner in there for some offense, you know, here and there. But I'm more concerned with guarding their shooters, keeping, you know, their guards like Teague and Schroeder out of the paint is makes me a little bit more uneasy than how we would match up with, like, their front line or anything.
All right, Dan, I'm going to get you out of here on this last one from our favorite question asker, Seafoam Jones. If your pubes and your hair on your head had to be the same length, how long would you choose?
Well, probably like a buzz cut. Keep it simple. I mean, I don't style my hair as it is, so shave it all off. let's get like a one or a two.
That seems the most reasonable, because the other end of the spectrum just wouldn't make any sense. So
no.
All right, good. That's a good one to leave it off on. Sorry, Mike Mirosi. We'll get to you on the next week's show. Greeny, thank you so much for joining us. Where can we find you on the interwebs?
So you can find me on Twitter at StoolGreeny. Help me out here. I got to up it up with all the other Barstool people. But you can also find me on Barstool Boston after every Celtic game, day after. To those who read, certainly appreciative. Thanks a lot. I mean, it's not the most popular topic, but I certainly appreciate you guys having me on, and it was a lot of fun.
That sounds good. Everyone go like him, DM him your dick pics. Let's get this guy up to 10,000 followers at least by the end of the night.
For all the ladies out there, my DMs are open. Slide right in, no big deal.
That's a great way to end it. All right, thanks, Dan.
God, what a sexy conversation that was with Dan Greenberg. Thanks for joining us. You know where to find him now. Obviously, go to Barstool and find all sorts of goodness there. You can guess that ass. You can see him talk about what he talks about. You can see Deflategate coverage that I assume will go on for the rest of time. I don't think I need to tell you how Barstool works. So, don't forget to subscribe to the WEEI Celtics podcast on iTunes. Subscribe to it on Stitcher. You could just text me and I'll send you the link to the show. That's basically how distribution works.
Now, Jared's phone number is
617-555-6565.
123 Fake Street.
Okay, so don't forget to subscribe to my show, The Garden Report, at the CLNS Radio YouTube page. And that's the video version of my postgame show, Samuel Packard Barnaby, as his parents call him. No, they don't call him that. He's on the show quite often. We've only got a few regular season games left and then the playoffs, and we're going to do it big. We're going to do it sexy. And then, Sam, is there anything you want to tell people about?
I had a pretty good day today. I worked from home. I got a lot of work done. That's pretty much what I wanted to tell the people.
Is that why you're wearing jeans and New Balance sneakers today?
Yeah,
repping the New Balance.
I'm also wearing a pretty dope Washington Bullets shirt. And if you want to find out more musings like this, you can follow me on Twitter at SamPackardNBA. Thanks for listening to this episode of the WEI Celtics podcast. We'll talk to you next week as the Celtics return home from their 5-game road trip. Things will be wonderful. I take it upon myself to handle mine. Thinking that you got ample time to do this. Have you shot up? Thought you knew this. I'm crumbling. No type of problem. Telling my sacks. Watching my back. Whittin' them up like splish. Leaving them in a splash of blood. The clock is ticking. Niggas from my block is missing. I'm putting it down like it be hot before we all get shot. Got only so much time in this bastard. Me to be claiming pro, but I be saying they procrastinating. Settling for less. Better be ready when they roll up in your nest. And sink one in your chest. And you's gone. Up out of here for good. Y'all be bobbing back and forth to let me know you understood, yeah. What's up? There's only so much time left in this crazy world. I'm just crumbling nerve. I'm just crumbling nerve. Niggas killing niggas, they don't understand. I'm just crumbling nerve. I'm just crumbling nerve. So check me out. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.